to reconvene here. Thank you all. It's just time flies when you're maybe not having so much fun. Someday in life, I always tell my family we'll have fun again.
The time has been
happy, just not the catching of happy.
Oh, I like that. Yes.
The time has been productive. I understand from the prosecution team that item 19 for West Valley Charter, they have now signed their waiver. So I recommend that we continue that. They plan to settle. So if they settle, there would be no hearing in the future. But for now, we should officially continue that rather than hold a hearing on it today.
I move to continue item 19.
I'll second.
Moved and second. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
So order, no opposition. So thank you all for that, and thank you staff for work. I guess I can't thank them yet. But anyway, we'll thank you another day.
So
you're on that side of the table, you left-wingers or right-wingers or whatever you want to be.
I'd recommend then we go to item 22 since the representative is here.
And then just a reminder to the board, we will go back to item 9 and 14 when we complete 22 quickly. Is that correct,
yeah.
Staff? Okay. Perfect. So we will move on to item number 22. Again, we'll try to keep it into the 30-minute range. And let me just get real. Our staff. Okay, very good. So, introduce yourself, please.
My name is Kendall Kellogg, and I'm the sole proprietor, or I guess the 100% stock owner of Kendall Coast Corporation.
And Dorothy, did we have a name issue, or do we go with that later?
The prosecution has provided a proposed revised tentative order. It was on our table, so I suggest that we let the prosecution lay out their case and clarify the revisions that they propose to make.
Yes, you should have a tentative proposed order in front of you. The corrections that we've made, looking on the first page, on the third line of text where it says Kendall Coast Obester Wine Corporation, you'll see we've struck out Obester Wine to correct the name to Kendall Coast Corporation. Also, on that fourth line in the address, we're correcting the address to read 12341 San Mateo Road rather than 12342. Excuse me. In the first paragraph, line 4, again, you'll see we've struck out Obester Wine to correct the name to Kendall Coast Corporation. In paragraph 1, just for clarity, we've added the address of the the facility address, again, to state 12341 San Mateo Road, Half Moon Bay, San Mateo County. Also in that paragraph, we've corrected the name to Kendall Coast Corporation. Moving on to page 3, in the section where it says here, it is hereby ordered on line 2 of text, again, the name is corrected to Kendall Coast Corporation. The correction also exists in line 1 of point number 1, and also line 1 of point number 2 under the section where it is hereby ordered. Further, in the header of each one of the pages, so page 2 and page 3, we've corrected the name to read Kendall Coast Corporation.
And I believe at this time I would like to state to my fellow board members that this address is in Half Moon Bay. They have never contributed or been involved in any of my campaigns over the years, and I don't believe I bottle any of my wine there, and this possibly is the second time Miss Kendall has been in that I've been with, so it's not like I know her or anything like that, so I want to clarify that for the record. Is that correct, legal counsel? Sorry about that.
That's great.
So, thank you. So, I'm biased in this decision.
Well, good afternoon. Good afternoon, members. This is
tell me, North Media from the Regional Water Rights and Control Board in Oakland, in the enforcement section. And today I will be presenting, this afternoon I will be presenting item 22. Kendall Coast Corporation operates a winery located in Half Moon Bay. This facility is also known as La Nebbia Winery. In response to the In response to the August 9 expedited settlement offer and notice of non-compliance, the discharger submitted their annual report in September, 89 days late. The discharger did not accept the settlement offer. Following the complaint's issuance, the discharger submitted a waiver asking to engage in settlement negotiations. Additionally, the discharger commented it was unable to pay the proposed liability and submitted evidence intended to support that comment. The discharger submitted information intended to show it is unable to pay the proposed liability. However, the submitted information is not complete and is not sufficient to demonstrate an inability to pay. As a part of its complaint package, the discharger was served with an ACL fact sheet, or Administrative Civil Liability Complaint fact sheet, that included information on how to substantiate an inability to pay. For a business, the fact sheet noted a discharger could submit signed copies of the last 3 years of federal tax return, including schedules, copies of the last 3 years of company financial audits, signed copies of the last 3 years of federal tax returns for the business principals, including schedules, and any documentation explaining special circumstances. The discharger submitted information including partial copies of 4 years of federal tax return for the discharger and partial copies of 3 years of federal tax return for Kendall Keller, who is the sole shareholder and officer of the corporation that is the discharger. Some of these were unsigned. Information showing the discharger's typical postponed payments, including what appears to be the payment of property taxes on the land it also pays to lease, and a statement dated February 26, 2010 from a corporate bank account for the discharger showing an alleged balance of more than $25,000. These documents are in your package for this item. As I will discuss, these did not provide enough information for the prosecution team to determine that the discharger has an inability to pay the proposed liability. The discharger's submitted partial U.S. corporate income tax returns show negative income each year from 2006 to 2009. However, this was not sufficient to demonstrate an inability to pay. Inability to pay depends also on assets, cash receipts, and other issues such as whether a discharger may have flexibility in how it runs its business. Can it change operation and free up money to pay a liability? The prosecution team's understanding is that discharger Kendall Coast Corporation is controlled by Kendall Kellogg, who is listed as owning 100% of its common stock. Our understanding is Ms. Kellogg is the discharger's sole shareholder. In 2009, the discharger paid Ms. Kellogg a salary of $48,000. That same year, it reported an increase of about $75,000 in loans from shareholders to a total amount of about $170,000 in loans. Thus, she appears to have loaned the discharger $75,000 in a year when she was paid $48,000 by it. In 2009, the discharger reported that it paid spring 2010 property taxes of about $6,200, apparently on the property where its winery is located. The tax returns for the discharger and Ms. Kellogg bear the same address as where the winery is located. Additionally, the information from the County of San Mateo tax collector, treasurer, shows that the property owner receives a homeowner's exemption on their taxes. From this information, it is inferred that Ms. Kellogg owns the property, which is leased by the discharger for its operation. The discharger reported that it paid $114,000 in rents in 2009. Also, in 2009, the discharger reported paying more than $30,000 in interest. That same year, the discharger reported an increase of more than $100,000 in building and other depreciable assets, but did not submit information explaining how it was able to attain this increase. Given its stated annual loss and current losses and current stated inability to pay, the liability of about only $4,000. The partial information submitted also includes other deductions ranging from about $65,000 to $80,000 per year. However, the IRS schedules describing these deductions were not submitted. The discharger reported more than $120,000 in inventory at the end of 2009 and a total assets of more than $305,000. Finally, the statements for corporate bank account for February 2010 was submitted and showed an average balance of more than $25,000. And a total assets of $305,000. In summary, the evidence submitted by the discharger did not support its argument that it cannot pay the proposed liability. The incomplete information submitted suggests that the discharger has an understanding landlord who is also the sole owner of its common stock, and thus may have significant flexibility with respect to some of its greatest expenses. Other expenses remain unexplained, but do not necessarily appear to contribute to an inability to pay. Very recently, the discharger maintained an average monthly balance of more than $25,000 in cash in a corporate bank account. We believe the discharger is able to pay the proposed liability. Based on the information available to the prosecution team, we believe the board should impose the proposed liability. This concludes our presentation on the matter. If you have any questions, we would be happy to answer them.
Any further questions?
I have a question here.
Speak up, please, Dr. Singh.
Some places.
Dr. Singh, could you speak on your microphone, please, so the record can include your statements?
Yeah, get close.
Thanks.
My name is Rameshwar Singh. I'm a board member. What do you want me to say?
Speak up a little bit.
If you can make all your comments on the record, we'll have a complete transcript.
Okay. I hope I'm speaking in the microphone. What I'm asking, that previous document number 20, we had address error. And again, in this one I say, on the tentative order, 12342, and there are some pages I find 12341. What's the problem here? I mean, I would like to ask a staff why the address error is.
I actually can answer that. I actually can answer that. I went into the record this morning and this afternoon, and I looked at the process that increased that digit for each of the addresses that we sent. And basically what happened is that in the Excel worksheet, when you had an address, like let's say 1234, A Street, and then when you copy that address to the next cell, you just do a copy and drag into the next cell, it's going to say 12345. It's going to add one digit to that address. That's the reason why it has increased.
Is it a computer error?
I don't know if it's a computer error. It's an error that, in the function of copying and pasting for that specific maneuver. So in this case, what I should have done is basically copy it and then paste it instead of copying it and dragging it into the next cell.
Well, I'll request the staff to be careful next time. Such errors, they could be significant. I don't want to go in details, but I have some questions about this issue over here. Right now, I'm stopping right now for the time being.
All right, thank you. Ms. Dorothy?
Through the chair, I would like to ask staff to go back over some of the figures it gave regarding the amounts, the value that it would like the board to assume for inventory and other things. There were statements made on the PowerPoint and the oral presentation of dollars, but there was no indication as to where the numbers came from.
Okay.
So if you could tell us which attachment that you're referring to and point us to which line, I think it would be helpful.
It's going to be in the 2009 U.S. corporate income tax return. And for the first number, which is 100% of its common stock, we can find this in the, okay, so it's online, it's in Schedule C on a line, actually it's in Schedule E, for example, on line 1, as well as it's also in Schedule C in line, 8 through 12. As to the, in 2009, the discharge paid Ms. Kellogg a salary of $48,000.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, sorry.
Perhaps the board is following, but I am not. I'm seeing a document that says Form 1120 on the left-hand side. It says U.S. Corporation Income Tax 2009.
Exactly.
And that, if you could explain to the board where in the packet that might be.
No problem.
That it follows the end of the complaint.
Maybe count some pages back in.
Okay. So
easier way to do it.
All right. So it's in item 22, of course, attachment 4. And it's going to be in page 1, 2, 3. It's going to be in page, if you don't count the fact that it's double-sided, it's going to be on page 4. Of that pack of that attachment, which is attachment 4, page 4, and this is page 2 of the Form 1120, U.S. Corporation Income Tax Return, year 2001. Okay, and then in Schedule E, you have name of officer, and you have Kendall Kellogg. And you have 100% time to debit the business, and then you have person of corporation stock owned 100%. And therefore, also you have amount of compensation $48,000 on that line as well. And it's also reported on page 1 of 1120 for the $48,000 in online 12, compensation of officers for $48,000. So then if we switch to Schedule L, which is the next page, and there you'll have the numbers that we refer to as to the $75,000 loans. So you have, let's see, so then here, let's see, loans to shareholders. So then what we did here is we... and it's 919. Subtracted from so basically what we did here is we subtracted $97,224 from $172,365. And that's the difference between the end of the year and the beginning of the year, sorry. And then that's the same kind of subtraction that we made for the building and all the depreciable assets, and we come up with $100,000. Mm-hmm. Then in terms of the rents, $114,000, that's on line 19.
Excuse me, if you could back up, you said in something about depreciable assets, and it was $100,000. Where am I looking? Where should we look for depreciable assets and $100,000?
That's going to be in Schedule L, line 10A.
10A, thank you. So that's less accumulated depreciation, or your 11A is depletable assets?
Okay.
So which are you directing our attention to?
Oh, and then the next one.
We're referring to line 10A from Schedule L.
Thank you.
So in terms of rents, we have this being mentioned for $114,000 on line 16. And the total assets is in line D of page 1 of Form 1120 on the upper right area of that form, and it states $305,048. As for the inventory at the end of the year, it's going to be on page 2 of the IRS Form 1120, Schedule A, line 7. And let's see, so then we have partial information submitted also includes other deductions. And for the other deductions,
I think if I may, Ms. Dorothy, the board members have a couple comments to make.
Okay, right. Go ahead.
So, and I'll kick it off. It just, I just don't know how comfortable I am continuing to look at someone's personal income tax records. It just is starting to make me crazy today. Sorry about that. So I don't know how other members feel, but there has to be a better procedure out there for us to look at people's ability to pay. And that's just my personal comment at the moment. Board Member Peacock?
I agree with Chairman Mueller. I think we have sworn officers here who are swearing to tell the truth in this hearing. And I think we can accept their statements. We're not here to audit how you've added and subtracted and come up with a net worth. And I completely concur with the chairman. This is not something, this goes into some kind of a public record, and that these people have what is normally considered private between the Internal Revenue Service and the Franchise Tax Board out here for anybody to see. And I'm just concerned about it, too. The other point I would like to make is, again, we're wasting terrible amount of time with prosecution's effort and ultimately with the entire thing not having these pages numbered consecutively. It doesn't make sense to do it this way. So would we make sure that we have a commitment that for the June and July, when we do these, that we have the pages?
Board Member McGrath?
I would also be uncomfortable looking at somebody's personal income tax. I mean, I think all we know here is that there was $48,000 from this source of revenue, and maybe that's enough to live on, maybe that's not, but I'll accept that. But the item that I'm curious about, and I think we have to look at if we're looking at pay, is the rental arrangement. And I'm going to wait for Ms. Kellogg to testify about that financial arrangement. Again, I think we're looking at, if I understand it, $383,000 worth of goods sold, inventory on hand. But to arrive at a loss, there's a lot of rent paid. That's almost $10,000 a month. So that, to me, is an item of curiosity. And if it's appropriate at this time to listen to the alleged violator, both in terms of another thing I would like to hear from her, if they're not making wine at this site, why are they kind of keeping the permit and some other things? Because those go to the question of, is there risk? What's the financial arrangement and the capacity to pay? So I'm interested in hearing the other side of the story now.
Is that all right, legal counsel? We move on to reintroducing Ms. Kendall. Then.
Absolutely.
Okay, so we'll go ahead and speak into the mic, please.
So again, my name is Kendall Kellogg, and I guess I would start this off with, I was a former high-tech employee, and I have an MBA, and so I certainly set myself up in business with maybe a more complicated approach than your average sole proprietor. I was advised to set up a corporation when I bought the winery. My family helped me purchase the land there, and in terms of the rent that the winery pays myself, those funds are then turned around into a mortgage payment and a SBA loan that are existing on the business and on the property. So I think the current rent that the winery is paying is $9,500 a month, and my obligation to banks on that money is just under $9,000, and so there's probably another $700 of that rental income that goes towards taxes and improvements and whatnot. In terms of the $48,000 that I'm paid, it's not as a corporate officer. I'm an employee. I do all of the office administration. I guess I'm the person to thank for our late paperwork. I also do conduct all the winery operations. In terms of the comment that you just made about the processing permit, I've just looked into with the state regional board or the state water board filing a notice of exemption because I don't feel like I'm within the category of what you're trying to help enforce here. We're not doing any live fruit processing. All of our winery operations occur inside our winery building, and it's serviced by a septic system. I'm completely in sync with this board in terms of their dedication to clean water. We practice we're solid with our best management practices. We've got great straw of things around our runoff. We use all green gardening practices. I'm very much in sync with clean water and what we're about here. If you look at the process that I go through, I pay $1,000 a year to a stormwater group, as well as conduct the monthly reports that they require, and then we put all of that online. I do complete all of that paperwork on time, and I have that noted with my stormwater group. The piece that took us so long was to get the photocopies in to the regional water board. And, it was as simple as our printer wasn't working, and so I had to go to one of our local banks to ask for help making photocopies. And so, quite honestly, we're a small operation. Hearing the review of all of our financial information makes us sound a lot larger and more profitable than I believe we are. If you look at our cash flow, I brought copies of my bank statements. I hit negative in April, so that's sort of what we're facing. I just had to pay my general business liability insurance. We have a huge slew of debt that comes through this time of year in terms of annual expenses. And although I feel that this is an important mission and I understand regulating these things, I feel like a $4,000 fine for late paperwork is completely out of sync with the level of business that we do and the level of revenues that we're generating. So I guess that's my comment. Any questions for me?
Dr. Singh, please, microphone. We're going to get board member Schroeder there. We'll hold it on to you there.
Every time I ask question, my throat goes banana. Okay. But anyway, you are showing on your corporate tax return. And I'm not here, IRS, to check the accuracy of those numbers. So I'll take those numbers to be right. If there is something wrong, IRS will catch you. But I will take it correctly. In 2009, you're $89,464 negative. In 2008, you have $48,553 negative. That was a loss. In 2007, you had a $179,183 loss in your corporation. And in 2006, you have $91,489 loss in your business operation. How do you survive?
I'm currently working on a bankruptcy.
Chairman Mueller?
Yes.
If the prosecution team could ask a question,
yes,
for clarification. Sorry. Ms. Kellogg? You stated that you use a stormwater consultant group. What does that group do for you? What do you submit to them?
Basically, we submit monthly paperwork to them. So they provide us with, for $1,000 a year, they provide us with the documents that we go through to make sure our checklists are performed adequately. And so we're not just walking around the winery making sure that we're not violating things. They issue us best management practices that they update regularly. I train my employees on those practices, and I sign those trainings off, and I send them back into the stormwater group. They just put all of their stuff electronically, and so now I can once a quarter go on and update, my weekly checklists and my monthly rain tables and all of those things. And so basically, the information that you require in my annual report, the stormwater agency helps me assemble all of that information on a monthly and quarterly basis so that at the annual report period, then you have the information structured such that you like it and whatnot. So that's my impression of why I hire this consultancy group.
Thank you.
Board Member McGrath.
For the staff, I guess I have two questions. There's nothing, unlike the others, there's nothing about when they got their original permit and what their previous compliance record is. So that's kind of my first question. The second question is, I would like your comment on the question of risk to the environment from a fully enclosed operation. What are the nature of potential discharges that we should be concerned about, that you should have us think about and focus on? I mean, we don't want to focus merely on the financial questions, although that's substantial, but with a fully enclosed wine operation, I'm not sure what kinds of discharges I should be worried about.
This is Tom Mumley from Prosecution Team. I'm going to start with the latter question on if all operations at a facility are indoors, there's no permit required, but the law, the regs are clear. Facility associated with industrial activity is required to have a permit, and that has to do with material, waste, equipment are exposed outside. So wine, food processing, like wine, is in the conditional, it's in the category. A permit is required if any of these things happen outdoors. I was actually going, you know, so I'm not familiar with the site, whether there's dumpsters outside, waste material outside, or do we have experience with the site? And do we have experience with its compliance history?
This is Hatek Flair. I'm with the prosecution team. And based on the annual report, upon our review of the annual report, yes, they do have some diesels, even though it is inside. But they do have dumpsters outside that need regular inspection and making sure observations and so on and so forth. And the annual report itself also shows that they have done those kind of observations.
So, excuse me, then, on the dumpsters, we're talking solid waste dumpsters? Are you talking about equipment that literally dumps fresh grapes into a processing plant?
These are my allied waste dumpsters.
Okay. So it's solid waste.
Henry Franklin. And Board Member McGrath, this is Dan Carroll for the prosecution team. The complaint states that...
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
We're getting old up here. We need help.
I'm sorry. I feel like I'm putting it in my mouth. Board Member McGrath, the complaint states that there were no prior annual report violations, just to address your original concern.
So let's go back to the first part of it. Is there some possibility that a somewhat more streamlined permit arrangement may be appropriate on this property? Is that something that could be explored? I mean, I was first kind of flagged to this with the comment that no wine. I mean, I've made wine. I drink wine, I buy wine. It's not a good time to be in the wine business. And there's a lot of consolidation going on. But it is an agricultural product. Pressed grapes have BOD load. I mean, there are things to be concerned about. If it is entirely enclosed, though, then what you may have is a stormwater permit and maybe a more appropriate mechanism. I don't want to unduly load small businesses, but I really want to make sure that we're tracking as appropriate all the potential discharges. So if they're almost enclosed and could be a simpler operation, compliance might be, assuming they stay in business, compliance might be simpler. My first concern is compliance. Any comment on that from either?
So I guess one thing I could say to that is that when I took the winery over in 2002, I purchased it from a family, the Obersters, who had owned the winery for more than 30 years, and they did significant wine processing there. In getting up to speed in business, I just maintained much of the paperwork and permits and things that they had in place. So I admittedly have not gone back and evaluated why I'm required to participate in the regional stormwater program
And, you know, this attention-getting exercise has certainly educated me on all of the aspects of your, you know, mission and whatnot. So I have contacted the state and I'm looking into whether we fit into your program, and we'll let them decide. But from my initial conversations, the fact that we do all of our processing, what little, I mean, I've processed grapes one time in the 5-8 years that I've owned the winery, and it was in 2005, and it was all done inside. So we don't do any vehicle maintenance. We don't have those kind of employees to maintain forklifts and things like that. Everything is done off-site or inside our building and runs into a septic system.
So, Board Member McGrath, if I could add to that, the Water Board,
The Watershed Division has a stormwater unit that's engaged with this permit program. And so there are opportunities to, as you would say, to reduce the permit load. And they would essentially engage the discharger in conversation, possibly inspect the facility to identify, first, if there are, as it were, sort of primary activities like the wine processing that Ms. Kellogg has referred to, also other activities like loading or unloading, material storage outdoors, you know, storage of waste outdoors, and to see how that might be incorporated, or even if there are opportunities to you know, change how the facility operates that could, you know, take it out of the permit. So that's something that we do as a matter of course.
So I have one more question for the discharger. So can I summarize this accurately by saying that the applicant or the staff is willing to sit down with the discharger and see if there are ways to make sure that compliance can be assured with perhaps a lesser regulatory burden?
Yes.
Okay. So that's the first, and there's no immediate apparent grave threat represented by this.
Mr. Speak for the prosecution team. I haven't, you know, the staff here has not inspected the facility, so we couldn't tell you that there is one or there isn't one.
And then I guess the question that I would have to you is that why was it so late? We were pretty understanding with something that was just a little bit late. This is quite a bit later. Can you tell them? I use commercial Xerox machines, but I have big loads to Xerox.
Yeah, I don't have any good excuses for you. I mean, the August 3rd letter I received on August 17th, and so maybe things run a little late over at Half Moon Bay. I don't know, but I understand, you know, being penalized for the late side of it. The $4,000 is what seems completely out of sync with the late fee to me. I don't have a good excuse for you. It was photocopies, and all I can say is I guess if I'm involved in the program in the future, I'll endeavor to get them in on time.
Excuse me, Board Member, you're okay? We'll give your time to Board Member Peacock.
The gentleman, I appreciate it. You know, I look at this prosecution staff and I look at the general counsel's office and I say, we have absolutely brilliant people here. And then I look at my fellow board members and we're sitting here plowing through 8 inches or 8 pounds of stuff that you are hearing the same questions repeated to each one of the dischargers. It would seem to me that it would be appropriate and respectful of the board's time if you would summarize those questions on the front page so that we can actually not have to go through and ask, well, when was the first permit given? How many previous times have they been late with their paperwork? It's just an insane process to sit here and have to read all these pieces of paper when all that, you know it, and it's easy to summarize. You know it off the top of your head. Why make us go through this at the same time? I think it would make the whole process much more expedited. It would create a greater level of confidence. If the discharger disagreed with anything, it's very clear he or she could bring that up in their testimony. We need to streamline this process. It's extraordinarily tedious to have to ask the same question over and over and over. And I really respect what you guys do, and ladies and gentlemen do, but we need to get it so it moves a little bit faster. Does that make any sense?
Vice Chair?
I think I'm getting stuck on one point here. It's not clear to me whether after this conversation we have concluded that Ms. Kellogg's operation actually requires an industrial permit or whether it would be covered under some other program. Can you clarify that for me? Because I seem to have missed a beat here.
Yes, based on our current understanding, we would say the facility does require a permit because we haven't received information showing that it doesn't. However, our stormwater staff will, I'm sure, be in touch with Ms. Gellong to do a review. And as I mentioned before, even if under current operations, permit coverage may still be required. Also to identify, well, are there ways to change those operations so there could be something, you know, to reduce the threat and perhaps move to a different program.
And just to add to that, to be clear, I've already signed the agreement to be in the stormwater program, so as I understand it, the onus is now on me to fill out an exemption form that we would file in Sacramento to be removed from the proof of form. So I don't think it's an evaluation that could be conducted here. It's a process that happens outside of this area.
Ms. Torti?
Yes, I have a follow-up question to Board Member Young's question. Could the prosecution's attorney please address the question of what the status is if someone is covered under the permit but perhaps shouldn't be? What is their legal obligation to file that annual report? Thus going to what you believe this board's authority to be to ding them for filing the annual report late.
Okay, I'm going to address it. I think the question is by talking briefly about the reporting process. Every year, I mentioned we had about 1,400 facilities as of July, and you know one of the aspects of this reporting process is communication back and forth between the water board and these covered facilities. So during that process, we identify facilities that may have closed and they forgot to tell us. Even though under the permit, those facilities should have filed a notice of termination with us, or perhaps they moved and didn't let us know. So you know those facilities are not before you today. They were the permit coverage was, as we would say, administratively terminated. Those kinds of communications happen each year, and we would essentially have a discussion with the discharger and try and understand what the status of the facility was over the course of the permit year and whether the water board staff believes they should have been doing the reporting or the inspections, the sampling, and then submitting the report. Let me just make one final point. Ordinarily, the onus is on a discharger to submit a notice of termination to end permit coverage. There are a lot of dischargers. There are not so many board staff. As a part of submitting that NOT, discharger is expected to submit the reporting information that would be in the annual report to the date of the NOT. So ordinarily, we would receive that as a part of the termination.
I really want to make sure that the answer to the question is, so anyone who has submitted a notice of intent for coverage under the general permit is required to submit an annual report regardless of whether they had to be covered or not. It's the discharger's obligation to make that determination. We, within our resource limitations, provide assistance, and that's one thing that we do strive to do is to help dischargers make that determination. And they have the ability, as now noted, to submit a request to terminate because they may qualify for the no exposure exemption, and then we process that. So a lot of times we've resolved this in the past through dealing with non-annual reports, but I just want to make it clear, in this circumstance, we are not even aware of this opportunity or possibility till May, after a relative report that was due last July, so we had no opportunity till today to even begin this discussion, but we are certainly committed to following up with...
May I ask one other question of Ms. Kellogg? You received a letter on August 17th saying that reminding you that you had not submitted the report and offering an opportunity to pay a $1,000 fine and have until September to file the follow-up paperwork. And I'm a little confused as to why you would not have gone that route.
After I received the August notification, I submitted the report in as timely a manner as I could. It took a month, and I didn't realize that I was being offered a fee of $1,000. If you look at the extensive communications that we receive and the fact that my email address is wrong and my street address is wrong, I've been completely confused by a lot of the offers that have gone through. Like, for example, I didn't realize that I couldn't submit any additional rebuttal information after the prosecution team found that I did have the ability to pay. Apparently there was a magical date just after that when I should have submitted more information, but, you know, it's just too much communication. I don't know what to say.
Just for clarification, you did receive the August 3rd letter on August 17th, and the letter that I see that was written on August 3rd has some pretty clear instructions on how to enter how to participate in what's called the expedited payment program, which is really, you know, pay your fine once, submit your paperwork, and you'll be off the hook.
I didn't realize that there was a fine there. It's clear to you, it wasn't to me. I'm sorry.
Chairman Muller?
Yes, ma'am.
Excuse me. If I may direct the board's attention to attachment 2, the front page of the expedited settlement offer. The address reads, attention, Kendall Kellogg, 12341 San Mateo Road. We did correct the address on the tentative order, which was not submitted to the discharger, to read that address as 12341 San Mateo Road.
Well, looking here. Yep. Remember.
Mr. Chairman, I really believe we should bring this discussion into a prompt and equitable close, and for that reason I'd like to incorporate by reference every word of Board Member McGrath on the last case and propose that the assessment be for $1,475 on this, which is 59 days after the 30-day grace period that the discharger was late.
I support that.
I would second that, and I would note that there is here a penalty for not being prompt. It could have been $1,000 if they'd been a little more prompt. But there's also a recognition of difficulty to pay.
Well, we have a motion and a second, and we can continue to discuss it, and I guess we need to take a break to revise it again if we decide to do that. But my couple of comments are, in the economic climate we're dealing in, number one, at what point do we want to continue to harm businesses that are just hanging on? I just don't know that answer. I think every one of us at this table up here are in business and have been in business. And trust me, I woke up at 2 a.m. this morning thinking about it, too. We're all in a very deep concern. And a violation is a violation. I'm not justifying that at all. As I stated earlier in the day, we have rules and laws and regulations, and our role up here is to judge the information and weigh it out as best as possible from the prosecution team and the defense team. And how do we balance that out, and at what point do we not want to harm someone? And as I say, I'm in the area there. I'm a visual driving by. I have never stopped in there. If you're looking at a visual that an individual has taken a property that was, and I'm free to say these things as a visual, that has best management practices and flowers and plants and trees and shrubs and trying to do the right things, and then we come along and try to say, you know what, you screwed up, lady. We have to penalize you because that's the rules and the laws of our system here. But do we want to take that other step where we want to really put someone under. That's very close to like all of us to being put under. So that's just my little comments there. From a best management practice, from a visual driving by the pervious surfaces and the work that has been done over the years to try to clean up a corner, you know, I'll give them some credit there, some points.
Mr. Chairman, that's the thrust of the reduced. We're saving the discharger $2,550 from the proposed fine, but the failure in Half Moon Bay to find a Xerox machine is literally inexcusable. There are 1,400 other dischargers who filed on time, or 1,383, or whatever number it turns out to be. I can't do the math in my head. So I think that I'd like to just agree with what you're saying, but I'd also like to support, speak in support of my own motion and Mr. McGrath seconding and Mr. Ellison's seconding.
So if the board's in agreement to rewrite this motion, are you in the mood or no?
I'm in agreement that we could go with a reduced fine based on good performance in a number of other environmental areas. That speaks very, very loudly to this board. I might have chosen the number of $1,800 to repay our staff expenses because it is curious to me how one could receive the letter that was dated August 3rd and not act on it for a month.
Well, you're willing to make the amendment if you'd like. I don't know if the maker of the motion and the seconder would agree.
No, sir.
Throwing it out there.
No, sir.
Okay.
No.
Okay. So we're still back to the original motion. You have the book down there, Board Member Froder. I think you received today on parliamentary procedure. Are we in the ballgame here?
No. I actually agree with the motion. I do agree with the Vice Chair as well, though, that... it is spelled out very clearly in the letter what the process is. I'm a small businessman myself. I'm an insurance broker in Walnut Creek. And believe it or not, even in the insurance business, things are very tough. I've lost a lot of larger commercial accounts, and I've had to cut back. And I know what it's like to try to go from, you know, week to week. So I understand your pain and what you're trying to do. So I think the motion... it's a good one. It's a good compromise. It still does show that it's important to follow the rules and be in time, doing them all on a timely basis.
Can I make a comment myself?
Yes, Board Member.
Well, I support the motion, but motion. I think that small businesses are. This is a bad time, not only for business but even for government. It is bad time, but still we have certain obligations. We have to meet them. In fact, you know, it is nice to own a business. I mean, there is a pride there. But see, the MBA, and she could have worked outside and she makes more than $100,000. And her income is kind of $58,000, $70,000, $57,000 in 3 years. So she is working for probably because she owns her own business. I think so. I support the motion, and that's a good compromise. You're getting a big break.
Okay, yeah.
Be careful. Also, I'd like to say to staff that please determine if there is a question that this business is covered under the law or not. You know, make sure that it is covered. Maybe some of them, if they have doubt or they raise some question, ask for exemption, go and check the place, and if it's not covered, then exempt them, because this is an extra burden. And many small businesses are failing to report in time. If something we can do to remind them that, yeah, this report is due, that might help cut down all these problems.
Well, I think you have to remember also, all of us, that you know, board staff is under a tremendous amount of pressure also. And I don't want to defend them too much at the moment, but I will after. And I always ask, you know, with furlough days and reduction in salaries, I mean, it's tough for everybody, and they know that. They're doing their job. This is what the law told them to do. This is what they're doing. They're presenting it before us. We've heard it. And we've heard the discharger. We have our opinions, as I stated earlier. We judge this information. We try to understand the technicalities of it all. There's probably a better way we can understand it in the paperwork aspect, which is very difficult. But yet we do have a role for the environment. Even the discharger has mentioned it a couple of times. So I think at this time we will break briefly to get a reading on the motion precisely and try to get this thing completed here. So we will take a stand-place quick break. Again, see if we can bring closure to one more agenda item. It is one more. Okay, we're going to listen to our legal counsel, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, I have come up with some proposed revisions that I hope will capture the spirit of the maker of the motion, and I've made these revisions to the tentative order as described by the prosecution's attorney at the beginning of this hearing. So this is the order that corrects the name of the winery, so I will not go through and enumerate all those changes. In the first paragraph of the tentative order, the amount of $4,025 is changed to $1,475. On page 2 of the order, paragraph 10, the revision I propose is that the paragraph would be revised to say imposing the proposed administrative civil liability. It goes on in the third sentence, it says the board considered the based on information in the record. The new language would say, including evidence regarding the discharger's inability to pay the proposed amount. Following the end of that sentence, at the end of paragraph 10, a new sentence would be added stating, in addition, the Regional Water Board considered that there was no apparent harm resulting from the violation. On page 3 of the tentative order, on line 2, it refers to the amount of $4,025. That amount would be substituted with $1,475. In paragraph 1 of on that page, line 2, that same change would be made so that $1,475 would be substituted for $4,025.
Is that understandable with the board members?
Yes, sir.
And board member McGrath? Okay. We have a motion and a second. Everyone understand? Roll call vote, please, Mary.
Mr.
Eliade?
Aye.
Mr. McGrath?
Aye.
Mr. Miller?
Aye.
Mr.
Aye.
Mr.
Aye.
Dr.
Zane? Aye.
Dr. Young?
Aye.
Mr. Miller?
Aye. So ordered, no opposition. Thank everyone for attending today and listening to our testimony.
Thank you for your time. And just one point of clarification. Am I going to receive a bill for this that I'm to reply to, or?
No, the order, it's in the order. Or Tom?
The order clarifies that you are to pay within 30 days, and it clarifies to whom the check should be made. And so you should probably, the best way to do it is mail it to the prosecution team, the amount that has been enumerated here, $1,475.
So do I receive a revised order, or we just make 10 comments here?
The order will be revised, but your obligation to pay runs from 30 days following the date of this meeting. So if the order is revised within that time, you will receive it, but that doesn't start your time clock. Your time clock starts now.
Thank you. Is that correct?
And we typically get the signed copies of the order out within less than a week of the board meeting, so should be getting that shortly.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Kendall. Okay. All right, now we have to make a political decision here on how do we want to handle the people that did not show. I've never been comfortable with someone not showing up over my years, and I've kept a very strong position that They had the obligation to be here. They knew they were supposed to be here. So I guess, do we hear the prosecutional team's comments and then we can make a decision as a board? Because I don't feel like we should be delaying it since they're not here.
Mr. Chair, I recommend that the board consider hearing the matter now. If the party did not sign a waiver and the board does not act today, then there will be no action against them. So if they have waived time, it's certainly within the board's discretion to put the matter over to another month. However, all parties were provided with a notice, and we went above and beyond in that the advisory team ourselves took it on ourselves to send out an additional notice to all parties by letter, by certified mail, I believe, indicating to them that their matter was scheduled for today, that the matter could go late, it could go tomorrow, and that parties were advised to be here at 11 and to make appropriate arrangements. So this is above and beyond the usual extensive job of noticing that the staff does here. But we want to make sure the parties really understood what their obligation was. So I would recommend that the matter be called. If the discharger is not present, then certainly the prosecution team could put on an abbreviated presentation, but by them putting on a presentation, it will allow any member of the board who has questions of the prosecution to ask them the questions. Certainly, the discharges were advised that the board could adopt the tentative order as proposed. It could increase or decrease or reject the order. So all those options are available to the board.
Very good. And I would encourage you kind of have a sense of how we're feeling up here. So you could make them. But I think we ought to first clarify who we're talking about again here, because we've had some shuffling of the numbers on the...
The remaining items to consider are item 9, Depot Auto Wreckers, and item 14, Stellar IDs, LLC.
So could we make a very brief comments on that, and then we'll see what the board's...
I'd also recommend, I don't think we'll be surprised by the result, but just making a call if there are representatives of either of those.
Yeah, I've tried
just
a number of times here today. You're sitting too far back there, young lady.
At least you work for Depot, right?
Chairman Muller.
Are we all right over there, Natasha?
Yeah.
All right, she's looking and leaning too.
She's trying to
make sure whose name is on there. So let's go ahead again. It's a pretty trying day for all of you and for the board members. So let's see what we can do, because I'm in the belief that I'm personally willing to take action on these right now, not to tip my hand, but I've been through a number of these in my day.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to address Dee Dee. Do we need a motion to go ahead on this so that you have it absolutely locked down?
We do not need a motion. The matter was calendared to hear these things. If the board wanted to proceed in another way, then it would be appropriate to do that either just by the chair deciding or by a motion. It is, however, appropriate to clarify that the prosecution gave its quote-unquote master presentation earlier for two items only. Those were the items that were just heard. So that presentation has not been made a record of the matters that you... that are now agendized before you.
And Vice Chair has a comment.
Chairman.
Can we incorporate it into this for the purpose of building a record? Since there was nobody present to miss it, we have the benefit of it. And if there's a need for a transcript, it can be completely transcribed.
I would suggest that the transcription of those comments be made somehow part of this record. I'm not sure how one does that. Would it be a motion on, I guess?
Yes.
We have a lot of lawyers here,
please.
Probably more than Tiger Woods, so
if I may, in the interest of efficiency and getting us out of here, the prosecution would like to move that the board incorporates this morning's general presentation into the administrative record for items 9, Depot Auto Wreckers, and also item 14 for Stellar Ideas LLC.
Actually, my question was going more toward the reporter. Does our reporter have any questions about how to make that part of this transcribed.
Tasha, we finally have gotten you engaged here after all these years.
Well, I'll tell you what, we'll work it out with her.
You're engaged in more ways than one, too, right?
it'll be worked out. I think that's fun.
The intent of both the board and the staff that it be available since the entire record will be a written record.
Yes.
Let's make it official. So moved.
Second.
All in favor of what you just did? Transcript. Okay, thank you. Yes, we are. All right. Remember, we wanted brief comments here. Okay, item 9, please. Make sure we're the right building.
Good afternoon. I am Harte Kifle, a water resource control engineer with the preservation team. I will be presenting items 9 and 14. This presentation is for item 9. Depot Auto Records is an auto dismantling facility located in Hayward. In response to the August 2009 expedited settlement offer and notice of non-compliance, the discharger submitted their annual report in August, 55 days late. The discharger did not accept the settlement offer. The proposed liability is $3,175. We received confirmation that the complaint was served on the discharger on February 17, 2010. And this information is included in the administrative record. Following issuance of the complaint, the discharger did not submit a signed waiver, comments, or any written evidence. In March and April, using the phone number on record, prosecution team staff attempted to contact the discharger via telephone, but was unable to leave a voicemail. Based on the information available to the prosecution team, we believe the board should impose the proposed liability. This concludes our presentation on the matter. If you have any questions, we'll be happy to answer them. Thank you.
Board Member Picard.
Under the rules, what is the maximum penalty allowed? I just want the number, not a judgment.
Well, could have been.
The maximum penalty is $550,000.
How much?
$550,000.
And the penalty that we're seeking to assess against someone who doesn't show and doesn't respond is $3,175?
Yes.
I leave that as a pregnant question. Two.
Will be delivered later.
Two brief comments. It is clear that they did submit an application, so they're still doing business. And it is also clear to me that an auto dismantling operation is an operation with significantly more risk of water quality discharges than anything we dealt with today. I just want those two on the record. I'm not going to go for $550,000, but I'm certainly going to support the staff recommendation.
All right.
It strikes me that had the discharger been here, he might be facing a $175 fine based on when he submitted his report.
But don't go there.
I suggest that I'm very comfortable with the staff proposal on this one.
Okay. Do we need a rewrite on this one? I don't think so, right?
Only for the the address,
right,
that Mr.
Bissett had one. Damn address is too high. Help. Where's Google?
Do we have a motion?
Mr. Chairman, before we or decide anything on this, you are a Navy man. When you miss movement for your ship, the ship is in danger, and it causes great problems for every other sailor on board that ship at risk of bodily harm or death. Now, this is not a life or death case, but we have a situation where someone has deliberately chosen to be 55 days late and made a deliberate decision not to appear when ordered or requested to appear. I do not think the penalty is sufficient for that kind of behavior. We have shown leniency for people who made an effort, who haven't erred in the past, but now we're doing a slap on the wrist for someone or some organization or depot auto wreckers that looks extraordinarily lenient, and I don't think it sets a precedent for the next guy who wants to do it 55 days late. It's a bad precedent to set. So I would urge the board to reconsider and go for a significant penalty that sends the message to the discharger community that this board is serious about filing these reports properly and on time.
All said, Colonel.
Yeah.
Does the board feel that a doubling of the penalty is in order? Well, I would remind us all of the earlier dismantler. They have to be having huge issues. And as much as we disrespect auto dismantlers, they do a recycling projects for us. You know, I'd rather have an auto dismantler owe us for their late filing than dumping them in our canyons on the coast. Really, I'm serious.
Yeah. I would tend to leave it.
We're going to get him a pocket.
Was that a motion? I repeat what I said. I repeat, because the microphone was not. My recommendation is to accept the staff recommendation only with the correction of the address error. I don't want to get in big discussion over here. I know we'd like to fine and maybe hang that guy, but I am not in the mood to hang right now. So we have been lenient with two before. Let's go with the staff discussion and just I make a motion to accept the staff recommendation.
I will second that for the same reasons.
All right, moved and second. There was just a minor change there. Can that be handled?
Just the address on the first page should be 3764.
Okay. Any other further discussion on the motion? If not, roll call vote, please.
Aye.
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 No.
Aye.
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 Good.
We have one more. One more. Another day I'll tell you a story about missing chips, AWOL. Not me.
I was talking about going for keel hauling.
Yeah.
Chairman Mueller, prior to the prosecution beginning their presentation, I would like to happily announce that we don't have a correction to the address on the tentative order for Stellar Ideas. However, we do have another correction. On line 4 of the first paragraph, it should read issued to Stellar Ideas LLC, not issued to Earthbound. The other changes are on page 3.
That is it?
On page 3?
Page 3.
On point number 2 on the first line, again, rather than Earthbound. It should read Stellar Ideas LLC.
And those are shown in the attached.
Yes, you should have received a corrected tentative order.
And again, we're incorporating this morning's testimony, or the earlier testimony, about the general presentation by the staff about how we started with 1,400 and how we ended up with the small number we have left.
Yes, by board's motion, we've incorporated the general presentation.
Okay, so that's the change, and now we'll have a brief. Okay, brief report from prosecution team, please. Who's doing it?
This item is item 14. Stellar Ideas LLC, doing business as Earthbound, is an agricultural supply facility located in Pen Grove. In response to the August 2009 expedited settlement offer, and notes of non-compliance, the discharger submitted their annual report in September, 70 days late. The discharger did not accept the settlement offer. The proposed liability is $3,550. We received confirmation that the complaint was served on the discharger on March 8, 2010, and this information is included in the administrative record. During the comment period, the discharger submitted a comment requesting an extension of the hearing date from today to June 9. The prosecution team notified the discharger that an extension was possible if it waived its right to a hearing on the complaint within 90 days. We did not receive a response to our email and telephone notifications. Because of the discharger did not waive its right to a hearing within 90 days, and because the June board meeting would be beyond the 90-day hearing deadline, we are presenting this matter today. The discharger also requested a reduction in the $3,550 liability due to economic hardship. However, they did not submit any evidence explaining why the proposed liability would cause an economic hardship or any additional evidence beyond the statement that they were experiencing a hardship. Following receipt of this comment, prosecution team staff contacted the discharger via email and telephone, asking them to submit evidence substantiating an inability to pay. The discharger did not submit any evidence beyond the email. Thus, we believe they are able to pay the proposed liability. Based on the information available to the prosecution team, we believe the board should impose the proposed liability. This concludes our presentation on the matter. If you have any questions, we would be happy to answer them. By the way, the maximum would be $70,000 for this one.
$700,000. All right, so we, Ms. Dorothy, are we in the ball game here?
In the ball game with respect to what?
I didn't see your name as chair down there. Excuse me, I'll slide this down to you here.
Well, I want to go home.
Trust me.
Don't blame me for that. So I would like to make a motion that we accept the staff recommendation. Thank you.
Okay, we have a motion to accept staff's recommendation. And second, we'll discuss going home later. So right now we're at the fine of $3,550. Correct?
Quick point of order.
Yes.
If the board adopts this, would there still be the opportunity for the discharger to come in and request that it be reopened?
I don't think so.
So they've essentially waived their rights.
Okay. Just wanted that. The record.
I would like to clarify one thing as well. The board received the email requesting the extension, but without
the waiver.
The waiver. The board subsequently sent this entity two emails with no response.
Yes.
They have constructive notice at the same email they use.
I was just a little confused because there was a sort of a boilerplate item at the bottom here that said the prosecution's team understanding is that the discharger will appear at the hearing, and I guess we were just assuming that they would appear at the hearing. Is that correct?
Well, the last time communication we had was by email and by phone. We talked to Rick Williams, is the representative of the company. And we told him what the requirements are and when the hearing is going to be. And he said he will contact us, but after that he didn't respond at all.
All right, thank you.
Okay. Board Member Pika?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to just...
Microphone, please.
I'd like to just incorporate my remarks to the previous discharger. I think we're setting a terrible precedent by not imposing a more strict penalty for failure to appear.
So ordered. And at this time, we'll have a roll call vote, please, Mary.
Mr. Eliazo?
Aye.
Mr. McGrath?
Aye.
Mr. Moore?
Aye.
Mr. Peacock?
No.
Mr. Schroeder?
Aye.
Dr. Singh?
Aye.
Dr. Dillon?
Aye.
Mr. Moore?
Aye. So at this time, that concludes our hearings on enforcement items. I cannot thank our team enough and really truly really thank the prosecution team enough. Someday on a social level we'll buy a cocktail or a beer or something. But not today. So good job by everyone. And board members, thank you for the dedication today. And we didn't have to do it Thursday.
I'm just happy we don't have to come back tomorrow.
So I believe this kind of concludes the meeting as Dr. Singh wanted. Oi, oi.